Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for The Diplomat and the Beyond the Mekong series. With me today is Mechai Rivadia. Welcome to the program, sir. Thank you. You've had an extraordinary life and you're most famous for cabbages and condom. And in terms of Thai life, its social fabric, going back to the 1970s after you left school in Australia, came home and basically went into family planning. What drove you?
No, initially? I went into the government first.
Right, government first.
I was an economist in the government National Planning Authority. And during my 7 years there, I traveled around the countryside doing the evaluation work. And during that time, I saw that while we were doing some good in the development activities, but there were lots of babies everywhere, children. So that was the first one I recognized that we needed to do something. We had 7 children per family.
Right.
And so I came back and tried to convince the Prime Minister that we needed to do something. It took me about 5 years to convince him. And eventually we got a policy, population policy going. And then that's when I left the government to start a non-government organization about 50 years ago to start off on family planning and then HIV/AIDS and then poverty eradication and then social enterprises. And then the final one is the education in terms of a new type of education.
And it's been an extraordinary success.
It's been 50 years, yes.
Right, and over that period, not only that period, but perhaps 10, 20 years, that the birth rate in Thailand came down from about 7.2
to about 7 kids 1.5. To about under 2.
And that must have had an extraordinary impact on the economy.
And also on the AIDS one. Oh, it did. Sure. Did. But on the AIDS one, according to the United Nations, the UNAIDS said that while we launched the program, the number of people who were, percentage who were infected by HIV came down by 90% over a 12-year period. And the World Bank said that during the same period, 1990 to 2002, that the number of people prevented from being infected was 7.7 million. So all those things were documented by international organizations.
And you've been credited with saving millions of lives.
Well, I mean, it had to be done, so a lot of people helped.
Was there much opposition
in the family planning? Yes, from the Prime Minister.
Why was that?
Well, because he wanted to be a superpower, and he had very poor advice.
Was the belief that to be a superpower you needed
You need lots of people. You
know, right.
People's an asset, so I keep on going. He didn't realize that the truth about it was quality, not quantity. And on the AIDS side, the government at the time, the minister in charge of broadcasting said, I went to him and I said, look, I've got money from Rockefeller. I've done all the documents to do promotion on television, spots television, video, to go on national radio and television. He said, no, you can't. You will destroy tourism. And that was a fallacy. So right. Then I went above him to the commander-in-chief of the armed forces and got it. That used the military's 300 radio station and 2 television networks to do the broadcasting.
It's interesting because the military's role in Thai politics has been questioned enormously over the last 20 years.
But yes.
It seems to have...
Well, they did, nobody knew that this was the military who was able to prevent the spread of AIDS in Thailand.
What sort of opposition did you find in the villages?
None. People believed in us because we've been working for a long time.
Yep.
We had credibility all along. So we had, with the people, we had credibility because I was also a journalist. While I was in the government, I also taught at university. I was a Bangkok Post journalist for every Monday, had a radio program every night, and a television star once a month.
And in terms of pushing condoms and family?
Well, that came later on.
Right.
It was just a way of getting people to be relaxed about it rather than being embarrassed by it. You can't win the war by being embarrassed by the condom.
And you succeeded. I mean, there were programs where taxi drivers were handing out condoms.
We had taxi policemen giving out condoms. We called it a cops and rubbers program.
How did that work? Were they
traffic police giving out condoms in traffic jam? People liked it.
The taxi drivers were handing out condoms when they charged for the fare.
Yeah.
And here at Cabbages and Condom in Bangkok, free condoms came with.
So it's just a way of telling people, this is a product that saved lives. Don't be embarrassed by it.
And slowly it changed, but you must have had a profile in Thailand through journalism, through writing.
Everything. Yeah. People knew me from being the won the Best Actor Award too, so that the intellectual people knew from my newspaper or columns. Mm-hmm. People in the university and students knew me from my radio program, and the people at the grassroots knew me from my radio television program.
Okay.
As the soap opera.
And how devastating was AIDS, HIV, when it first arrived in Thailand?
We said that had we not done it, between the year 1990 and 2000, we expected between 2 to 4 million people to be infected. And as a result, the UN said that what we did in the 12 years, 1990 to 2002, 90% of new infections were prevented. And according to the World Bank, 7.7 million people had been prevented from being infected and dying from AIDS. So that is a very serious situation. Had we ignored it, what would have happened?
And this is very much your own initiative. I mean, there were programs and in place around the world, but you decided to run your own race on this.
This is my country, so I did it here.
And
luckily, I got some help from some organizations in funding.
Mm-hmm. Who were the main backers?
We had some from beginning bit of Rockefeller.
Yep.
The International Planned Parenthood Federation. Mm-hmm. And then from the German Food Freedom from Hunger campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are ordinary organizations. It's an entire organization, too.
Now, your mother was Scottish, your father was Thai, you were schooled in Australia.
Yeah.
Both parents were medical doctors.
Yes.
How much, in terms of their influence, how did that...
Well, I think it's very important that they said that whatever you have, you have to share.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just keep everything yourself. You've got to share. For instance, my parents were doctors. They had a clinic that was commercial, but they also used a clinic at home for those who couldn't afford to pay to come to the house.
And you grew up around
in
that environment.
Yeah.
Must have been quite an extraordinary time, because this would be post-World War II, I guess.
Yeah, well, I was born in 1941.
Right.
So I was 6 years old when the war ended.
And that carried through in terms of what you would do next. Where do you see the situation now? Do you think people are becoming complacent about AIDS, HIV? They see it as a disease in the past?
Well, generally people sort of go to sleep on it unless you keep on doing it. That's why Coca-Cola advertises still today, because people forget after 14 days. Human recall factor is 14 days. So have to keep on. Don't think that you've told them one, they remember. No way.
It's got to keep going, keep pushing the message.
That's why they say out of sight, out of mind.
And there's also a new generation.
Yeah, you have to keep on doing it. That's why Coca-Cola is still advertising.
Yep. How do you, indeed, how do you find the next generation of young adults?
Well, we're doing it through the education system, through the schools. Mm-hmm. We have our own school where the kids help to run the school. They buy, they do all the purchasing, everything the school needs to buy, vehicles, food, air tickets. They interview and select incoming students. They interview and select incoming teachers, evaluate them.
And this is the Bamboo School Project, which,
when
was that initially set up in Thailand?
15 years ago.
And how is it progressing? How many students do you have?
Oh, it's done well. We have 180.
Right.
And the UN has said this is the one of the most innovative schools in the world.
And it's also, you're spreading your wings into Cambodia?
No, they came to us.
Right.
We're not spreading our wings anywhere.
Okay.
They came to us, they like the system where we get the school to be a platform for social and economic advancement in the villages. And we helped them on a pilot project in two schools in Cambodia on the Thai border and a temple. So that worked extremely well.
Now, how does this work? Because my reading of it is that it's focused on rural villages, and it takes in the rural lifestyle, how they were raised, what they do in those villages, and combines it with a school curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we do is we teach them to be a decent person rather than how to read and write, or according to the Ministry of Education, but we add more things. We don't use just the classroom, we do outside the classroom. every student must do business. We have a loan fund for every student.
Right.
Every student has about $800 of loan fund available to do business, because they've learned, they have to learn how to do business rather than to try to be an employee. They should be an employer.
Okay. What sort of businesses are they?
Oh, they have many in aspect of agriculture,
yeah.
Food production, solar panels, mm-hmm. Mushrooms, lemon trees, solar panels,
yep.
Car parts, any business that they can do.
And it's...
Anything, any business, they go to the market, they take a look.
Right. And how are they fitting in with the local communities? The Thai-Cambodian border is a very interesting place. Mm-hmm. And
That's in Cambodia. We don't know about what it'll be. We've just started. This is just the second year we're doing it.
Right.
But the students seem very interested. They have new vegetable growing vegetable in buckets in gravel. Mm-hmm. No neat soil. So not a new way of growing vegetables. They like that.
Okay. My guess would be that family planning and what started with cabbages and condoms is incorporated into that curriculum as well?
You mean family planning?
Yeah.
No, in our, not Cambodia. Yep. In Thailand, family planning, sex education, we don't have to tell them to have few children. We have to say, look, there's a right time and the wrong time. You have to understand sex. Mm-hmm. It's the wrong time, the right time for it. And it can be very dangerous. And for instance, we have a Russian roulette.
Yep.
You go and take a look. It's a safe sex roulette.
Safe sex roulette. You're going to get into a...
It lands any number. There are 31 sexually transmitted diseases from sex.
Right.
And so they get to see it.
Yep.
They understand it. Otherwise, they don't realize it's 31. It's not just pregnancy. It's all the other things.
And up there, you've got safe sex, use a condom.
So all the other diseases.
Predictions of diseases, gonorrhea, HIV, AIDS, safe sex. So the idea is that
we have on the side what it looks like,
yep.
And what the conditions are. So okay. It's real.
And
our students do the teaching to other schools.
Right. And so that basically sex can be like a game of Russian roulette, and you're
taking
chances.
Make it interesting.
Yep.
You know, kids don't like subjects that are dull. That's why they don't like to come to school. They want me to be more interesting.
Okay.
I'd like to try a school that we pay kids to come to school. I bet you they'll come.
How did you find the reaction, or the different types of reactions?
Very good, very positive. That's why the Ministry of Education has got me to be its advisor. They said that our system, mm-hmm. according to the Senate,
yep.
should be in every school in Thailand. They like it.
So a different type of response between boys and girls?
Same.
Okay.
We say it's the same.
Right.
That your son or your daughter, it's the same.
And it's moved on.
No one's against it.
Well, they were initially by the sounds of it.
That's for family planning and AIDS,
right.
But not education.
You kind of...
I climbed the hill first.
Right.
Family planning hill and AIDS hill, and then after that it's all been downhill.
Okay. How have you found the governments over the last 10 years, particularly there was a coup 10 years ago, and all sorts
Thailand's
of problems.
A coup in Thailand is part of the natural scenery. Don't be too serious about it.
Right. Well, you were in several cabinets.
Yeah, but not because... I was in because there was a coup,
mm-hmm.
and we had a very good prime minister. And after a while, he ran the government with selected people. And
right.
at one time, he asked me, the first one government.
This was
another government,
yep.
And that was Anand. But the one was General Prem first. So I was quite selective, naturally. They were very good and honest people.
Did that change?
Sorry?
Has that changed?
What do you mean, has that changed?
Politicians over the last 10,
20
years? Some
have changed, some have not. See, the politicians will only be better if the people are more attentive to their action.
Right.
Pay more attention, don't just leave them alone.
Stay on them.
Hmm?
Stay on them.
Yes, you have to. Otherwise, they're not going to pay attention.
Do you think there will always be a place for the military in Thai politics?
Well, I used to say no, but now I have to say that we can't dismiss it yet. Because if the politicians get bad, just look at the current prime minister, yep. who's a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Ran away, came back, and now he's been given pardon.
This is Thaksin Shinawatra.
Yeah, now he's going to do it again. So maybe the military will have to come back and do something again, depending what Thaksin's up to.
Right. And there's a lot of speculation.
So people are looking to the military right now.
Does the military hold a special place in
yes,
Thai society?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
I know it does in other countries.
The king is head of the military also. Mm-hmm. So in terms of history, the military has been the savior of Thailand.
And it will continue to do so by the South.
I think there'll be some combination. Right. The military will get better and better and better, and so will the politicians. But they will keep an eye on, the public will ask the military to keep an eye on the politicians. Yeah.
What have been the most memorable aspects of your life?
All of them.
You can't separate one from the other.
And some people say, what have you been proud of? I said, none. I'm glad that it didn't fail. Right. It's not a matter of being proud of something. I did it because it had to be done, and I'm glad it didn't fail.
Were there any moments where you thought it may not work?
No, I mean, climbing up hills, your ankles and muscles ache. You've got to know that. Changing your attitude and behavior is a difficult thing.
Yes, it is. And,
so you've got to understand that. Mm-hmm. So don't expect, you know, like ice cream, it'll melt. It'll take time.
Okay. Thai society, more broadly, very different provinces in Thailand.
Yeah.
Did you find more provinces were like Isan, up north, Chiang Mai, further south?
There are provinces that are wealthier
yep.
and people change more rapidly. But at the same time, in every province, there's the distant villages. And they're the ones that are suffering most. Because what's happening is that when you finish your education, you don't know how, if you don't go to university, you don't know what to do. You mm-hmm. never learn how to earn money in vegetable growing, in businesses. So you sell your labor mm-hmm. in the factory. So we now have 6 million kids living with grandparents because the parents are living in town, mm-hmm. earning a living. So that you can say that these Thai women, these poor Thai women, are being denied the basic human right of being a mother. They cannot live with their children. Not just economic, mm-hmm. it's the human side too.
I was going to ask you about religion.
Yes.
Much of Thailand is Buddhist, but there's also a substantial Muslim population. It's much smaller Christian populations. Did you manage your message? Did it come across evenly across the board?
I say every religion is good. Mm-hmm. And people ask me what religion I am. I said, I'm not sure. I at least know two religions that I belong to. I belong to a club. Why can't you be more than one? Why can't you have more than one religion? You have more than one friend.
Indeed.
People have more than one friend. You have more than one many things. So why not one good belief? More than one good belief? Why not two religions? Why can't you have more than one religion? Religions try to make you good. So I said, this is a blockage. Open it up.
This is a message that you kind of... Do you impart these sorts of social messages in the Bamboo School Project?
Yeah, we just say that accept people. Gender equality is one thing, but it's not just gender. It's every aspect.
Right.
Whether it's color, it's religion. Everyone is the same. Everyone is important. Everyone deserves to be loved.
I think people would argue that around the world, issues like racism, tolerance towards other religions has improved. It's much the same in Thailand.
Well, people say that Thai people are very tolerant people.
I heard that many times.
I said that is really not a very complimentary remark. Mm-hmm. I say the Thai people are very accepting people.
Right.
For me to tolerate you mm-hmm. and for me to accept you is two different meanings.
Yes, it is.
So that's that they are accepting. They don't just tolerate, it's just the same.
What do you think of the sexual activity you see on the streets? So it's not that widespread, but when you go down to certain...
Well, it all reflects down to the level of inequality in terms of income. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only thing you can do. You have a good singer, you have a good voice, you sell your voice. So
right.
they have nothing else. They say, well, sex sells.
It's interesting, though, in terms of the rise of transgenders, for mm-hmm. example, the optics in Bangkok, the visuals in terms of what you see on the streets, quite remarkable how that's changed over the years.
Yeah, the Thais don't seem to worry about that. If you want to be that way, okay.
Yeah.
You're not injuring anybody else, so have your way.
And that concept of Thai acceptance.
Accepting, yeah.
Accepting. that's kind of been a backbone of what you've done.
Yeah, I think it's very important that I'm accepting people. And I understand that they will accept many, many things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to explain it well.
I was going to ask you, what were your darkest moments over the last 30 years? But
I don't have any.
That's what I kind of anticipated. That know,
everything has some light.
Right.
And nothing is grand, nothing is terrible. It's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you know, you divide it in this, take the average of it all.
And cabbages and condoms, it was a business,
yes.
A business model that worked very successfully.
It had difficulties during COVID, but apart from that, it did very, very well.
Has it picked up?
It's getting better. It's not back to the same level, but it's much better. It was able to supply 75% of the association's needs in terms of operations in the villages.
Mm-hmm. What sort of clientele? The clientele.
Well, a lot of them are foreigners. Because
right.
They come here, they see condoms everywhere. They take pictures, send to their friends. They come, and it's probably the most famous Thai restaurant in the whole world.
It probably is.
People have said so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, where else can you go and get a condom? Condom decorations everywhere, lights, table,
yeah.
Flowers.
So I come in, though, I don't quite see it anymore. It's because it is so everywhere,
Some people are quite surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pleasantly surprised and they pass it on.
Have you ever had any negative reactions from foreigners or?
None so far.
Okay.
Often when the children, they bring the children and they start crying. I start blow up a condom and give it to them. They like it.
Mum and dad are okay with that?
Yeah, sure, why? It's from a rubber tree.
Yep.
If you're embarrassed by the condom, you must be more embarrassed by the tennis ball. Get rid of Wimbledon, Australian Open. There's more rubber in it. The other thing is that what we've done, when you're trying to change attitude behavior, you must try to add humor into it where possible.
What are the funnier moments that?
Well, you just have to add humor in where possible.
Mm-hmm.
You're just using a condom. For instance, I train teachers. We trained 320,000 school teachers over 5 years. We had a teacher's condom blowing championship to see who could be the biggest without bursting. And they all came out on board. They laughed. They realized that, I said, see, look, you're putting it to your mouth. How can you say it's dirty? Getting it that way. So they laughed and they joined it. And the best one for each region got a free ticket to go to Singapore as a prize.
I know in other countries like Cambodia, when it was coming out of the war period, there was not dissimilar campaigns going on because the country was in such a mess. But one of the competitions they had there, I guess, basically a wooden penis, and they were training women young women how to put a condom on in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd get prizes
or banana.
Or bananas. Where would you like to see cabbages and condoms and the bamboo school progressing over the next 5 years?
Well, basically, it's not so much cabbages and condoms.
Mm-hmm.
It's a social enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
That you do a business and use the business gains to make social change rather than just to buy yourself a Rolls Royce,
right,
or a private plane,
mm-hmm.
to use the profits to make change, because you got to get the money from somewhere. You go begging, it's not going to last. So you're going to make your own money.
It's a terrific attitude in that there's a lot of people, not necessarily in Thailand, but in other countries in Southeast Asia, including, I do mean government.
They've
ministers.
Got to learn how to give. For instance, the Sustainable Development Goal, the UN has 17.
Mm-hmm.
We said that's not enough. We need 4 more for Thailand. One, no corruption. If you have corruption, the poor aren't going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Two, sharing. For those who have, they must share some of it. Next is obey the law, rules, regulations. And finally, take care of your own family's welfare. Don't expect the government to do it. So now what we're doing is now food and income security for the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
They can earn 2 to 5 times higher than the government elderly pension from doing this with us.
I think there's a lesson in that for other countries, in that there are some countries that do have their hand out.
They can do the same thing
all the time.
Every country has a school,
right?
Has religious institutions. Use it. It's just very narrow. They stay in a box. But that's why with the children, see, the teachers are used to having a box, but the students are not, so they're open. Our students in grade schools who are working, they can grow melons in grade 3 in schools.
And going forward in terms of the social enterprise, not just the business
we have 240 schools,
right,
to have a social enterprise. We've got money from the private sector. We've got farms going for them that earns income.
Yep.
And a loan fund earns income. And program in the villages earns income. It belongs to the school.
Where are the greatest needs now?
Well, the need is always to get somebody better at the one that is in greatest need. Everyone's in great need. The greatest need is the elderly, because they're going downhill. So we're now using them to grow vegetables in temples, temple land. We have 40,000 temples. They all have land. So they're saying to people, come and use the land free. We give you water, electricity. You don't need land reform. They just need to use the land free. So here we are. We've got temples in every country. So we're doing it here. And we're now building first temple. We're building houses inside the temple for those who don't have a family member helping them at home, elderly. They come and live in the temple. And the food from the temple, accommodation, and the vegetable growing, they have friends, they have income, they have a clubhouse.
There's often been said about Thailand that the Thais are very good at looking after their own. Thais look after Thais. It's not said in other countries.
Well, it can be done. Just get used to it.
What separates the Thais, though, in that?
Sorry?
What separates the Thais from other countries in that attitude? What do you think is behind it?
Well, it's just that we respect our elders. And other countries also respect their elders.
I think.
But not all. So.
Not all, and not all as much.
Yeah. And they have things that we don't have, so.
My guess would be, too, that the social demographics are changing. In that 30, 40 years ago, you would have grown up in a post-world.
So the ones that we're helping most are the elderly.
Right.
So now the end of their life is an uphill climb of happiness rather than a downhill.
So there's no aches and pains going up this
hill? Well, they go into the temple now. They have friends. Mm-hmm. They have accommodation. They have food every day. They have health care coming from the local. The monk has asked the nurses to come to take care. Mm-hmm. And they have their friends there. They have vegetable growing.
And this is all done under the
It's in the temple.
Structure.
In the temple.
Right.
So people are helping the people, but not the government.
Perhaps that's a better way of being in terms
of... Yes, absolutely. So here the elderly people, we have 40,000 temples, so let's say we say 10,000 temples, that's for 10,000 sets of homes in the temples. People give money to the temple.
So Meechai Vivada, you spent your life solving other people's problems in Thailand from all the generations
working together, yes. Working with them, helping them to solve their problems. Helping them.
How do you think you'll be remembered?
I don't know.
Do you care?
No.
On that note, Meechai Vivada, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.